Okay, let's bring this meeting to order. June 19th, 2012, in the City Council Chambers, Newburyport Conservation Commission. This meeting is being recorded. First item on the agenda are the minutes from June 5th. Any comments? I did send Gretchen one addition to the culvert on Plum Island Turnpike, just to say that John Eric had done a work change order to get that sewer pipe to go underneath the culvert instead of through it. It would have been a lot easier filing if they just did that in the first place.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next. Let's see. The Wetlands Protection Ordinance update. It should be voted on Monday. So we should have something by next week. Now the mayor has to sign it, right?
Yeah, after they. Mm-hmm.
So we may have something. I hope.
Yeah, and then we'll have to get it up on the website. We should probably get it up on the website now anyway, just so people can start looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments on the regulations? Any of you review the comments, the regulations yet?
Question about fees. We don't have a fee schedule yet, right?
No.
What's the plan on that in terms of when that will occur and how that will occur?
Well, Andy, I believe, had said he wanted to have a separate sheet for that instead of having them in the regulations.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean a separate sheet? How can it be in a separate sheet without being
That's how he put it. He wanted a separate thing we could post on the web or something.
Oh, okay.
I had thought that they would normally go in the regs, and if anything needed to be changed, we'd just change it. But I would expect that's up to us, whether we want to have it in the regs or separate.
I feel like it should be both. I feel like it should be in the regs, and then we should have a separate sheet that we can distribute to people.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Yeah. It can be a separate, section,
yeah,
whatever, 18,
right,
in the
mm-hmm.
fee schedule.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk to Andy about it. I'll try and get together with him and see what he thinks. In terms of what kind of fees, increased fees, Had you guys discussed this before?
We had on several occasions,
A long time ago.
Yeah, there was the draft that Mary Riley had done at one point in time, and I think we discussed a couple of them anyway. I'm not sure we really got very far with it.
Do people feel like the fees are inadequate? I don't know that they're inadequate right now. It seems like they're...
Well, there were...
What fees?
Fees for notice of intent, IDAs.
You mean the state fees?
The state fees, but also the city collects $50.
Right.
And then $150 for the public notice. Just, trying to think about what we want to ask people to pay in addition to all these other fees that they have to pay.
There were some things like on for large delineations, there was a per foot fee. If I can find that old schedule we had. We had a good size listing of stuff.
Okay.
Might be worth checking into what other communities are doing that have wetlands bylaws as well in terms of their fees.
Mm-hmm.
I expect a lot of them are listed too.
I know Raleigh has.
To make sure
we're Raleigh
consistent.
Has a local,
okay.
Local bylaw.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll look around and see if I have that whole thing.
Okay.
It ought to be in place pretty quickly after the ordinance is adopted if there are going to be fees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the other thing is we could build up some bit of history as to
what additional work on the city side is involved.
Maybe that's a, I think that's a good way to look at it too, Paul. Why are we charging these extra fees? Yeah. Like all of a sudden, oh, we're just going to charge more because we have an ordinance, but why? Let's talk about the additional work and that kind of thing. Okay.
Right.
I'll talk with Andy about it.
Yeah, I can see like the disturbance.
We can look into what other communities are doing with similar scope ordinances.
Sturbridge apparently lists a whole pile of them.
Okay. Sturbridge.
And I think Peabody might have had them too.
The, okay.
Andy's when he wrote. You know, Mac has a whole bunch of ordinances on there. Okay. The Plum Island jetty repair project.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we can just have it. We can just discuss the beach management
committee
meeting.
Right. Do you want me to give a brief update on the jetty repair?
Sure.
So we had a meeting with the Army Corps and CZM and DEP on Monday morning and yesterday morning. They have the plan in place that you've seen for the route across the dune, utilization of the parking lot and all that. We already know about that. DEP has done the roadway testing for load bearing, and they've placed some restrictions on how many trucks per day and what weight. I think it's something like 30 tons, 15 trucks a day. So Army Corps is now taking that information back, looking at the costs. I think the city is also asking for them to recoat the roads at a minimum, recoat the roadways and the parking lot after they're done. Army Corps is taking that back, looking at their costs, and it may be that it's actually cheaper at this point for the rock to be barged in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What is the bronze?
Yeah. I mean, it's... We don't know that yet for sure. They're going to eventually, I think, leave it up to the contractor to decide. But they were indicating that the way it's looking with these additional costs that they're incurring by going over land and across the dune, that it could end up being cheaper to go by barge, which is good for the dune, but not necessarily good for the jetty because, you know, that means less work they can do on the jetty if the whole project is costing that much more money. That's the update. They plan to go out to bid by the end of this month, get bids in sometime in July, and award the contract in August. And then we would hold a public meeting at the end of August, but try to be getting the word out even before then through press releases and things like that about what's going to happen.
Did we bring it to their attention that it looks like this roadway goes right through where the sea beach undergrass is?
Yeah, we didn't bring that to their attention. I do need to get back in touch with NHESP, who hadn't called me back. I left them a message asking for their advice on that, and I'm not sure what's going on because I haven't heard back, but I will.
You know, thinking back on the aborted first bidding process for the dredging, do we have a kind of a contact person at the Army Corps that keep us apprised of whether the bids are kind of in line with what their budget is for this thing?
That's a good question. I think that, I mean, we know who to get in touch with at Army Corps, at O'Donnell, and they're a group there, but we're having periodic meetings with them to be updated as the process moves along.
Okay.
So,
because we don't want to do too much by way of scheduling a public meeting if all of a sudden
the
project's
dead. And that was their point, was that they don't even know a lot about how this is going to take place until the contract is awarded, and the contractor will decide and lay out the specifics of the plan based on cost and efficiency and their equipment and their methods and that kind of thing. So that's why they said we wanted to hold a public meeting in June, and they said, let's not do that. Let's wait till we have a contractor on board, because otherwise we might say, get ready, we're going to close the parking lot, we're going to go over the dune, we're going to close the playground, and that might not even happen. So let's not, you know, waste our energy now. It'll end up being close, though. You know, it'll end up being the contract, if it's awarded in August, in late August, and they want to start in early September, it's not a lot of time to get details out to the public. So we'll have to work quickly to put together a public meeting.
You know, if there's a size, a weight limit of 30 tons going up the road, what is there a limit on what size of vehicle will go across the dune?
The vehicle that'd be going across, so the truck's bringing them in, they're saying 30 tons, and they want it to be 5 axles. They want the weight to be distributed and that type of thing.
18 wheelers, yeah.
I guess 18 wheelers, yeah. That's what that would be. Then to go across the dune would be, I forget what they call these things, but they're 14 feet wide.
Like U-foot.
Huge wheels, yes.
U-foot.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're 14 feet wide, that's all I know.
By its footprint, gives out less pounds per square inch.
Okay. And they would be really constructing, in their terms, constructing a road across the dune, bringing in gravel, laying down either some type of mat material or wood on top of it, which wasn't what I had heard before or expected them.
And they'll be removing that gravel?
They'll be removing that gravel. Of course, we have no detail about how they would do that at this point, and what they would maybe bring in if anything has to be removed. It was, I think we need more information. Somewhat frustrating. Yeah, I would. I was too.
Plus, even at the 30-ton weight limit, the consultant of GZA hired by the city said that even at that weight limit, there was going to be damage to the roadway. Not that that's fine,
really?
But there would be damage.
And then they also have to bring in, which are going to be way more than 30 tons, they have to bring in the actual equipment, not just the rock, but the machinery to move the rock once it's
done. The trucks are about 15 tons, so the trucks can only carry 15 tons of material for a total weight of 30 tons.
Well, they were saying that to bring in, like, the excavators and to bring in the actual equipment.
Well, that's probably heavier.
It's heavier. And so we need to make, there's going to be exceptions to the 30-ton rule for one-time periodic trips with all this equipment. So, we'll see what happens to the roads. But it just, the whole thing sounds like it would be a lot better if they barged it in.
I'm sure they know that too. That's got to be. Well, they're already discussing it. So, and the police officer who was here is saying he's going to set up with the state police to put a weigh station on Plum Island Turnpike. So, if they get all the way out there and it's heavier than the 30 tons, they're going to have to go all the way back.
But that's not a good thing, because when it goes back, that just costs money. That's money coming off the total budget.
Right.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, I think they're looking at it more and more, saying, not sure if this is going to
be. At the place of loading would be better, but of course that's no answer. You can't ask them to answer statements.
Yeah. Right. Anyway.
So also the beach access ways. The discussion was to close them all off, all the way up to Grant Street, too, I guess. Grant Street. And
Grant Street is a little, tiny little street off of Reservation Terrace near 61st, like 3 houses on Grant Street.
And there was a request from the mayor to see if the Conservation Commission, who actually has budgetary money right now, purchase the signs to say that it's closed, because the budget is coming up in July and they'd like to get it closed ASAP. So
There's no money anywhere in the city?
Not right now. Not until after July 1st. That's no, pretty soon, but still.
I don't think we're talking a lot of money.
No. It's actually appropriate for us to spend the money on it because it's protecting the beach and the dune. I mean, it's pretty germane to...
Is there any plan to bring sand in?
Definitely don't have money for that right now.
They don't, but...
I'm just curious how much trouble we're going to be in, like we were last year.
I don't think the blame is going to be laid on us.
No.
If people are upset about it.
No, and they know the city's not going to spend money in... What's the woman who organized the last purchase for sand? I don't remember her name.
City councilor?
No, yeah. The woman from Plum Island who was sitting out here.
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't remember her name, but she had discussed possibly organizing to buy sand.
Oh, right. One of the neighbors, yeah. Yeah, the neighbors might get together and... You never know, they might decide it's worth it to purchase some sand for a further home.
So what happened to the metal ramp? Is that still intact?
More or less.
It's too steep to use it right now.
Well, didn't Andy say it got damaged too? Got a little damaged?
I don't know if it's damaged, maybe. I missed that, but we went out and looked at it. I wasn't sure that it was damaged, but it's really too steep at that point now to put that down and use it. It's like a ladder. It would be like going up a ladder with no rungs, you know?
It's landing on the bags, too, I think.
Yeah.
It may have caused some damage to bags. Why it wasn't pulled up, I don't know, but apparently it wasn't.
I thought it was pulled up.
Well, I thought I heard that it had damaged
maybe.
A bag there.
There is damage to some of the bags, but...
Is that what I heard?
Maybe.
Did I hear that right, John?
Yeah, okay.
But the ramp was down during the storm?
Yeah.
Yes.
What happened to that
thing? Yes.
Right.
So, I'm not sure how much, what are we talking about, like 6 signs?
Yeah, it would be somewhere around there.
Because they want a couple signs up.
On Northern Boulevard.
What are they going to say?
No access to the beach, dune rescue. Oh, I don't know what they'll say.
Yeah,
public safety.
Directing them to a different street and
yeah.
Have access to the
beach. 61st Street.
Yeah, 51st was. They were saying 51st was okay too, right? Or more or less.
Oh, I don't know. I never went down 51st.
Yeah, they were directing them to 63rd.
Just make 63rd.
61st.
Just make sure they don't say per order of the conservation commission.
Right.
The mayor, that's okay.
Not the conservation
commission.
Right. Andy had some good language. Gave some good language for the signs.
Do we want to pay for these signs?
How much are they?
I was supposed to get an estimate for tonight, and I didn't talk to Jordy. So I'm not exactly sure what it would cost, ballpark. We need sort of a ballpark figure, but I can get that this week. And
6 signs?
Yeah.
And metal signs, or are they going to be
cardboard?
Or? No, I think they need to be metal signs.
Well, they should be metal because if this, they can be reused.
Right.
We'll buy them.
We can move them around. Yeah.
Unless someone takes them to a dorm in their living room or something.
Is that a dorm room?
That too.
Right.
But,
I mean, do you want to approve a round figure and not to exceed?
About $2,500.
$2,500.
Well, it'll be way less than that.
Really?
But if you say $2,500, then at least it's
throw out a number then.
Well, then if you're comfortable with that, then do $2,500.
Or you could also say, you know, limit to 6 signs, 6 permanent movable signs, and the upper limit of 2,500 or 2,000.
Do they need stanchions or poles or?
DPS probably has
those.
Yeah. I assume DPS
is
going to put
them. It'll be a lot
up.
Less
yeah.
than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be basic. I'm trying to remember how much it costs for the open space parcels. I don't think there were that much. Because it's just basic text saying,
right.
Do this. We're not going out and getting them designed like for the...
Or we're not putting the city seal.
If there are six of them, how about $1,200, which is $200 a sign? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Motion?
Yeah. Move to authorize spending $1,200 on signs.
Second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Steve, Donna said she put your name in so for Monday night.
I got an email from her.
Okay.
Looking for a resume.
Okay, yeah, she said the counselors are asking for resumes for all their appointments now.
We gotta find them somewhere.
That's I have an update. I had a talk with Mary Rimmer about the salt marsh monitoring project, and she read through the shading analysis and all the background information that I gave her from the NOI and from the other reports that we had. And she thinks it's an interesting project, but she's a little bit concerned that we want information that at the end will show cause and effect and be able to be used to request mitigation possibly if we see changes. She's just not sure that, given the size of the salt marsh down there, that the scale of monitoring and analysis that could be done would be able to show cause and effect. So she's taking a look at it. She's going to go down there and survey it a little bit and get back to us. But she just wanted to let me know that if that's what we're looking for, there could be so many other forces at play, and on such a small area, it would be really hard to show that it would be shading. So I said I would let you know, and then we'll get another update from her after she takes a closer look at it.
That's section 417, I guess, Durbridge.
Oh.
Regs, okay. And fees. They don't seem too onerous. Anything they want to discuss? I'd say it's close enough to 7. All right, next item on the agenda is certificates of compliance, requests for determinations, minor modifications, extensions. Dino Pantelis, Pioneer League, playing fields, informal discussion.
Playoff game. It's the only reason he missed this meeting with you guys. Who do I present these plans to?
You can leave me.
Okay. I have multiple copies here. So. So, Dino is very thorough. So, there's 7 full site plans. And there's also and this is just a zoom in of the particular area that we're referring to. In addition, there's some pictures of the existing conditions. Right? This particular picture is a picture from the road leading into the area that we're talking about. What we're looking to do here is just to take...
Give me a couple over here.
Yep.
Give me
there you go. And it's just to take an existing area which is used for parking and just to smooth it out and just put some gravel, some wooden guardrails in. So we're not looking to change the use in any way, but we're, to be honest, just looking to kind of keep it simple because we're, non-profit. Everything we do is on a donation basis. We've been making some nice improvements down at the Pioneer Fields. I don't know if you guys have been down there, down in Merrimack Street, but we renovated the three fields. So far, we've spent a few $100,000, and the entire project is going to be a $1.5 million project when it's done. This next phase that we're trying to do is something that would hopefully be done in short dollars, and that is just to take some of to recondition this parking area, take some of the parking off of the street now, because it's a somewhat dangerous situation. If you haven't parked there along Merrimack Street and tried to back out, you'd understand that it's quite dangerous. So, all we're looking to do is to make it a little more usable. Again, like I said, just not changing, the grade, anything of that nature. There are, you can see, can you see the wetlands as they're mm-hmm. relative to that parking area? Mm-hmm. And we'd look to do it with this natural materials of gravel and wooden guardrails.
Okay, so you'd be adding the guardrails, adding the gravel, but not changing any of the grades?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is this the parking area where you pull them off the street?
Yes.
Where you get to the
field? Exactly right. Yeah, so if you're coming from downtown, it's on the left-hand
right.
side.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of wet in there, isn't it?
It's right now, to be honest, it's as dry as a bone.
Yeah, it's dry. I never knew wetland was there.
Yeah, there's, there's some area in the back, and I don't know what caused it. It's the runoff of the... There's a huge
down from
hill.
Atkinson.
Yeah, coming down off of Atkinson. But, to be honest, it's kind of... There's a little bit of a dip there where that kind of settles, and then this area is I think it's at a bit of a higher elevation than that. But that's certainly not my area of expertise.
I'm not even sure that it would be bordering. Would it be isolated?
All of the proposed work in the shifting net parking area.
That's correct. Yeah. We will have additional phases down the road, which we'll have to come see you separately. Yeah. But right now, as I mentioned, the first three phases, we did the initial 3 years, was about $350,000. And this year we're looking to do something. Again, we want to keep the project moving, make improvements. But this one would certainly be of a much lesser magnitude than what we've done in the previous 3 years. But again, just showing people tangible results, especially a safety issue like this.
Who delineated these wetlands, and when did they do that? Do you know?
I don't know the answer
to
that.
Okay, I'm just curious. Because like you said, it is pretty dry out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it says it's not an apparent wetland right off the bat that you notice. I'm just wondering if this is an older delineation or if it's something that was just recently done.
It definitely was not done recently.
Okay. So you didn't just hire someone to have them go out and do this?
No.
Okay.
There doesn't appear to be a way to keep people going into the wetlands, right?
No, there's not currently, but certainly we could.
Put a guardrail.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just something to.
Yeah, absolutely.
It isn't obvious that it's a weapon.
Yeah.
People just keep going.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, just
lay
some
aerotize
or something in there. It doesn't get plowed in winter, so it
will
be moved, right?
No. No. And the only use for this particular lot is between the months of April and July.
Mm-hmm.
It's not used for anything.
Would you need to be taking down any trees?
No.
Okay.
No. can see there's certain areas where there's stone already, you know, in the area, mm-hmm. and it's just kind of a mess right now. There's just big dips and holes, and we just want to level it out and just put some gravel in. As much as anything, just kind of delineate the parking a little bit more so that people understand where they should park, so we get more cars off of the street.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm sounding like a broken record, but the safety is a big deal down there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Drive by there enough.
Yeah.
Start to see from the area.
So what you need to know from us then is what your next step should be.
That's exactly right.
Right, because, you know, we don't have an actual filing, but they've come in to show us this. I'm thinking they could possibly do an RDA, but it's up to you guys in terms of what kind of impacts you think this will have. But since they're not changing the grades and it's only within the buffer zone.
I would think an RDA would be sufficient.
Yeah, I would think so.
They're not removing any trees, and it's an existing use, so.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice for our own purposes, though, to find out when the delineation was
done.
We had a project there a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and I believe there was the delineation. That wasn't redelineated then either, I don't think.
That year, correct. So it's been a while.
So it's been back.
Yeah, that's accurate.
I just think it might be useful in the future.
It would be.
Particularly if it's going to be more work over the next few years.
So you're saying to delineate the...
No. I think we need to find out from our own records when it was done. I think we could probably have a record of it.
So. I can look it up. I can look that up. Okay. And, I mean, I think... Obviously, we should do a site walk, or I can do a site walk just to confirm that this boundary is approximately accurate on here, in case it's way off. As long as it's not... It looks to me like this is pretty conservative, just because I've been down there.
I think that's correct, yeah.
It doesn't seem like the wetland comes out that far, if there is one, but I'll go out and check just to confirm that it doesn't come out any further than this. And then I'll find out when this original... delineation was done.
One item of concern is that whatever filing is done, assuming the ordinance passes, and that this will be done under the ordinance, since it's a 25-foot disturbs. It looks like this is closer to 25 feet of wetland.
So that means we just have to come in a little bit further, come off a little bit more?
Except that they're not really changing the current existing conditions at all, other than putting in, they're putting in gravel and granite posts, but it's currently dirt.
It's currently used as parking.
Used as parking. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to think about how, yeah.
Guys, got anything else?
If you could help me as far as the RDA is concerned.
Yeah, we have, I can actually go get you an RDA application from our office and some instructions to fill it out, and you can take a look at that, and you can always give me a call if you have any questions
about it. And is that submitted to...
That's submitted to us. Yep, 10 copies, and we would put it has to be submitted 2 weeks prior to a scheduled meeting.
Okay.
Our next meeting is July 10th. And we would then review it similar to the way we're reviewing and talking about this right now. But we would then issue what would either be a positive or a negative determination, which would allow you to then go do the work. If it's a negative determination, what we're saying is that the work that you're proposing will not have an impact on this wetland.
Okay. And outside of just completing the RDA, is there any other work that we'll need to do in the interim?
In terms of I don't think that the wetland's going to need to be redelineated. If this was a notice of intent, then we'd want a new delineation because that sort of sets the boundaries in the record.
Okay.
Whereas an RDA wouldn't.
Okay.
So,
All right. Tom, you have a comment?
Yeah, just with the ordinance, if the work could be shown to not be altering the area, then the 25-foot would apply. So
right.
It's carefully so that
right.
the work that's done is such low right. impact that you know, it's very basic, not alteration.
Right. If you make it clear in yeah. the when you fill out the form for yeah. the RDA, mm-hmm. there's it's a lot of sort of forms, and you just have to fill out the information requested. It's a state form,
mm-hmm.
and then it would be helpful always to have a narrative explanation
okay.
to go along with that, an attachment that explains in narrative form what the proposed work is
yeah.
and how the proposed work will not have any adverse impact on that adjacent wetland.
Right.
So, and that would be sort of any permanent impacts and also any impacts during construction. So how you would propose to protect that area. I'm going to go grab you the app.
Great. Thank you.
So with that, you're going to add, like, guardrails and such?
Yes.
Yeah, wooden guardrails. So. Just trying to, well, within, we're just trying to keep the entire look of the park natural as, mm-hmm. as much as possible. The idea is to try to get the lower park to make the upper park as much as possible as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to change the drawings to show all that.
The guardrail is yep. on the interior side of the parking area or on the street side? It's the granite curbing that you're adding or proposing on the street side of the parking
yeah,
area.
Yeah, you know, and that's a different phase as far as the granite curbing on the street side. I mean, right now, it's just the area within that parking area, which is in a smaller print that you have
oh,
there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and so at this point, we're not looking to do any granite work. Everything is just going to be the wooden guardrails and gravel, so strictly you know, natural materials. And,
well, where would the guardrail be in relation to the parking and the sidewalk and so on?
Right. Well, there's no sidewalks that are in that parking area.
Oh, I see the guardrail now. It's
yeah, okay. and one of the suggestions though was to add some guardrail on the area that is adjacent to the wetland, mm-hmm. so that people don't
yeah.
you know drive that way. So there would be guardrail on two sides and one end, and then it would be open from the street.
Yeah. What's the 8x8? Section here. Is that for a handicap spot? This looks like it's for a handicap spot. I was just wondering what that 8x8.
Yeah. I to be honest, I do not know that answer.
Okay. So, what sort of guardrail are you considering? Just down here, or
it's going to be along here, and then depending on you know what this particular configuration is here, something along this end to prevent people from
okay.
you know driving in the wetlands.
Yeah. All right.
Thank
you
very
much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate the help.
Hey, what's your schedule like? Are you thinking you'll submit something for the July 10th meeting? Or
I'd like to. I mean, I didn't take a look at the RDA, so I don't know exactly what the requirements are.
This is pretty much you've already gotten most of it done, and then you just need a narrative.
Yeah. So as long as we have it in 2 weeks before the 10th,
yeah,
that would be great if we could do that.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you in that.
Okay. Great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And using, you know, one of the large-scale plans in your narrative, just make it very clear what this particular body is for.
Right. Got it.
Right.
No, I see. I see that.
That's great. Great. That's a good point.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Hold on.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Can I get a motion?
Motion to recess for public hearings.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Okay. First item is Robert Germanara, 2 and 8 Ashland Street. Notice of intent.
Good evening. Good evening. Steve Sawyer here with Rob Germanara for the proposed single-family home at number 8 Ashland Street. I'll just go over the general site location. This is number 8, property number 8 at Ashland. Ashland Street, Merrimack, the large parking for the Ferris Shawnut. There is a wetland area that was flagged by Carrios Environmental in the rear area of the property. It encompasses a substantial portion of the property. The only hydraulic connection of this wet area is through the parking lot, through a series of swales and pipes to a swale towards the northwest corner or the northwest side of the parking, the Ferris Shawnut parking. From there is a swale, and then it's piped underneath Merrimack to another swale that runs, I guess, it's to the north of the ferry landing boatyard. So the proposal is to construct a single-family home, 26 feet wide by 45 feet, with a 24 by 24 garage. We've located the home completely out of the wetland area, and we've pulled the house as far forward as possible to comply with zoning. We're encroaching. We have a 17-foot offset, which is beyond the required offset, but through zoning, they allow you to average the two homes, so we've slid the home forward to the greatest extent possible. The garage will be on the right side of the property with the driveway. The closest point to the wetland, the back foundation is only 3 feet from the wetland, but we've shrunken the depth of the house to the maximum extent practical to pull that forward of the wetland area. There are some trees along the front of the property. Those trees will be maintained except for there is one tree that I guess is dying. It's in tough shape right now, so that tree will be removed. The topography of the land works fairly well. If you look at section 8A, you have the roadway curb. It's the grade is raised with where the trees are located. It's a stone wall, and then it drops by 4 or 5 feet and then grades back to the wet area, the wetland area. Currently, this area is entirely maintained, it's mowed, except behind the wetland line, where it remains in, there's cattails and frag back there, frag buddy. There are some Norway maples to the right side of the property, which can be maintained also. So the way that it works, the section through the house, it'd be a full height foundation here in the front. If you look at the section, to get the footing in, to install the footing, there was only about 3 or 4 feet of excavation in the front edge of the house. You'll see that the existing grade bisects the lower slab and is about 2 feet or a foot and a half below the slab grade in the rear. So in the rear of the property, there would just be a shallow frost wall with a slab on grade. Basically, it's a walkout condition here. There will be no doors on the rear. At this time, we're not sure if we pour the foundation. We just pull a full foundation where all the land behind the house is unusable, or if we pour a half wall, a 4 foot wall with some windows to get light into the basement. Any access to the basement would be off to the side of the building. There is a deck proposed to the rear of the building. The deck is well above the grade. There'd be 3 sonotubes that would be hand dug with the soil material put in pails and hauled off beyond the siltation line that is located at the wetland line. So there would be minimal impact. There is plenty of light and air to maintain the vegetation underneath the deck. And the deck, there'd be gaps placed in the decking so rainfall would fall between. As far as planting behind, from the stairs here, this area, we have a usable area of lawn here. The area behind the house due to the proximity to the wetland would be unusable. There'd be mitigation planting right up to the foundation wall there. I believe Carrios Environmental called out sweet pepper bush or something up to the, I'm not sure what the rear planting was indicated as. There was a rear buffer zone planting.
I wasn't able to find that.
Sweet pepper bush.
Where is that?
Rear buffer. It's on Part 5 planting schedule. There'd be, for the rain gardens, there'd be red dogwood planted in the rain gardens. Alternatives would be northern dogwood, viburnum. New York fern would be some of the low growth asters, and New York fern would be the low growth in the rain garden to the west side of the property. There would also be a Cultec. We'd tie the front gutter into a Cultec system that should be located underneath the driveway to handle and mitigate increased stormwater runoff. So the project is proposed. What we're doing here is just trying to utilize the available land while minimizing any impact to the wetland. That's our approach here. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
Is all of the runoff from the roof going down into the Cultec?
The runoff from the roof from the front gutters would run to the Cultec. The runoff from this gutter, we direct it towards the rain garden.
Oh, okay.
There'd be sheet flow to the rain garden.
What is the current source of water from this well? Is it just runoff?
I believe it's a fair amount. It's runoff from the surrounding. It's all graded in down towards the wetland from Ashland. This parking lot in this area flows into the wetland also.
It does look like you're eliminating a source of runoff. I mean, the water from the front of the roof is going into an infiltration system, which I don't know, is that going to end up in the wetland? Or is it just
no. One thing we could do, if we're concerned about, I guess with the drainage system there, with the drainage system in place, if any inundation of water, it runs out, we could continue. The other option would be to direct the gutters to both of them to this side of the house, where the stormwater would run down this edge of the property into a rain garden over top and into the wetland. That would be a simpler approach. We'd be happy to do that. Happy to. Unfortunately, it's one of these sites where there's limited available land. I think we're trying to take the...
Is this a proposal for 2 and 8 or just 8?
Just 8.
Okay. It says there's an existing stream on the site under 100-foot discretionary zone. All proposed work which takes place within 100 feet of the existing stream shall be buffered from said areas with the double roof stake rails.
Actually, I did not write the narrative. That was a little easier.
I'm assuming that that's just...
I think that might have come through from another project.
The deck will extend 24 feet into the wetland. So 10 by 24.
No, it doesn't. It would cover only a small portion of the wetland. I guess at the greatest extent, it would overhang 5 feet at this portion here an overhang 5 feet. And we have, as far as clearance from the grade to the deck, we have 8 feet. So this red, the red line is the silt fence, so it's just this corner here, just this back edge here.
It's all high, and our accent from the deck is off this one. So it's in near the garage.
The deck is off. You have the garage, it starts at the corner of the garage, runs over, and then. So we have a 10 by 24 overall.
It's 10 going into the wetland.
Yeah, it's 10 feet going into the wetland.
24
along the back.
How is it that there's no quantification of wetland impact, given that there's going to be actual work in the wetland? It says there's zero BBW impact. But you've got a deck, and you've got sonotubes, and you're going to have construction activity. So I'm just not sure how there's not even any temporary construction phase impacts to that BBW.
The limit of the impact temporary would be just to go out whatever the an 8-inch diameter sonotube to go out to the postal digger, dig it, slide in your sonotube and pour the concrete. The soil wouldn't be stockpiled there, it would be pulled out, so there'd probably be at the most 3 feet of impact. And speaking with Rob, if we wanted to take those sonotubes out, we could cantilever out. We may not make the full 8 feet, so we could cantilever the structure and then provide some angle bracing underneath, and that would remove any sonotube requirement for sonotubes. So that, you know, we could modify the construction of the deck to the...
That was my first thought. Cantilever it out, and you're not going to... There won't be any direct impacts. There'll be some shading impacts, but there won't be any direct.
But when you're excavating to the foundation, there will be any impact on the left-hand side of
this corner here. There's 3 feet to get the frost wall in. You'd have your silt fence. It'd be very close, but you'd only need to go 8 inches beyond for your footing. But then with another a foot and a half is about from the face of foundation is what you need to excavate. They'd have to be very tight control. You'd have to be very tight control in that corner.
The other concern I have is the, you know, people like to use their yards, and they're not going to have much yard here, and there's stairs coming off the back and everything. And I'd like to see some at least quasi-permanent delineation of that wetland.
Yeah. I think what, you know, as far as, you know, the rear, there's no, it would be a mitigate, it would be a minimal maintenance planting, a natural planting, I think it was the sweet pepper bush along the rear. So this area would not need to be accessed for mowing. The usable yard is in this area. If there was, we could provide some manner of delineation so they wouldn't encroach.
Yeah, because I can't believe they wouldn't encroach if they can. If there wasn't something.
Does the commission have any recommendations? Anything done in the past for delineating? You know,
granite part? Blocks.
Granite posts.
Wood posts.
They've offered.
I think the regs. There's something in the regs on that.
Our
local ordinance, right? In terms of what we
Is that the new
right,
ordinance? Is trying to recall the four by four granite post with a marker. Every, you know, typically this space to 25. So we can locate a few here, and they typically, I think we'd want them set up upgrade, just so they're permanent. And neighbors and people can see that, okay, they're moving well beyond those markers.
Which way is north?
Yeah, you're north arrow.
Oh, wrong one. Yeah. That one looks compacted there, doesn't it?
It's just about opposite.
Doesn't match the orthophoto.
Yeah.
I think that one's correct.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's correct.
That is correct. And north arrow is
pointing west.
Yeah.
So that the shading of the wetlands, not only from the deck, but from the house itself.
Well, yes, there would be. There, you know, right now there is some tree canopy around here, around the wetland. Granted, it's set back. There is currently a lawn area, but there are some rather large trees in this area.
I guess is there would have been a lot more trees if it hadn't been continually mowed.
Excuse me?
There would have been a lot more trees, a lot more shading, but it's a mowed area, so.
I think
I'd
like to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, do a site visit.
Okay.
We could stake the corners of the house and the deck.
Set up a site visit. What works for most people? Evenings. We sometimes do them at like 5 o'clock, right before another hearing. But in this case, maybe we want to give more time than that.
Next week, 5 o'clock
on Tuesday night.
Yes.
Does that work?
Yeah, 5 o'clock works.
Okay,
Doug, can you do it?
Folks.
Mm-hmm. Next Tuesday is fine.
Now, are there any other questions? There are probably, I guess, next Tuesday we could maybe discuss the issues on site or additional issues.
Does anyone else have any other questions?
I can't think of anything right now.
You know, I recall that many, many years ago, a project was denied there. And I just wanted to review that one. Whether that's why the house is shifted.
I actually am not familiar with any previously proposed project.
Questions from the public? Okay. Yep.
What happens when you're doing maintenance to the back of the house?
Can we have your name?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mary Craigie, High Street. If you're doing any sort of maintenance to the back of the house, would you not have to then put it on the wetlands or to paint or?
In this area, you'd set up on the decking. You'd set up on the deck for this area of the house. In the rear, yes, you would. You'd have to set a ladder. You'd have to set a ladder into the wetland area.
Is that ever an issue? I don't know if that's an issue.
We hadn't thought of it. Thanks for bringing it up.
You know, I have some questions just about this, the narrative. It referenced an existing stream. It's referencing areas of grading. It's referencing new buffer and wetland vegetation being established. It's referencing temporary sedimentation basins, replacement areas.
The problem is
it just makes me question. I don't know what parts are true and what parts are not.
Okay. Let me.
And I think that's important.
Yeah, let me. I'll review it with Bill.
Okay.
And
revise it.
Get a revised.
Make sure it's accurate.
It exactly matches project proposed here.
Yeah.
He also, this is typical with Bill, he refers to Exhibit B. There's no Exhibit B in here, but I assume it's the plan.
Yeah.
He also refers to planning zones A, B, C, and D.
And they're not. There's no plan that shows.
Yeah, he's talking about the roadway buffer, planting this bank here. The rear buffer is here. The rain garden here. I did pick that up.
You can figure it out.
It'd be nice to look at. You know, I'll coordinate it with Bill and have an updated plan for the sidewalk.
And an updated narrative.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
That would be fine.
Okay.
All set. So I assume you want a continuance?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, next item on the agenda, Anthony Finari and Ralph Castagna, Industrial Park, soil maintenance. And we seem to have...
check and see if Ralph is here. Okay. I know to have... I sent an email to asking, you know, given those comments, what he wanted to do in terms of opening the hearing or not. And he said, yeah, I want to open the hearing because we need to at least get started, and we'll invite DEP up to talk about it after. But he wanted to get the process moving. So, but given that they're not here, I don't know. It makes sense.
We can go on to the next one, and then
you
can
show
up.
Yeah. So, we're going to have to do a continuance?
Well, let's wait. Let's just table it.
Come back to it and
show up. We don't have to open it, right? If we don't continue it.
And next item, Warren Russo, 182 Northern Boulevard, notice of intent.
In an A zone. This funny area on Palm Island has no elevation associated with it. So the rule of thumb that seems to have been applied, an A zone typically floods 2 feet above the average grade. The rule of thumb the commission seems to have applied to the site in the past is 2 feet above the highest point. So we've kept that interpretation. On July 3rd, it will become an AE zone, elevation 9 in 1988 notice. This is the site, essentially, on the corner with 61st Street. You have this area of lawn. It goes back to a partially paved, partially gravel drive under a three-bay, I guess it's best seen here, three-bay carport. That was also subject of some earlier permits. This is from the assessor's record. Just happens to have been taken right at the right time when there was still plywood up. I kind of want to show what that looked like at that point. And then this area here is the area where there is an approved garage, although, you know, then when you look through all the orders, is it approved, is it not approved, is it still sort of up in the air kind of thing. But this is where the garage was approved and where we're proposing to put a garage in the project. There's really nothing to speak of growing on the site in that area. And then as you go towards the front, it transitions to entirely long grass. So there's no native vegetation to be impacted by the project. So among the items that have been approved on the site are a three-car carport that has been constructed. It was sited, then the siding was removed, and then DEP changed the policy again, so the siding could be allowed on it down to 2 feet. An 18-by-20 shed, a location for that was never shown, but it was approved in an order to be able to put an 18-by-20 shed up 2 feet above grade. There's a three-car garage that was approved over here, and trying to think if I'm forgetting anything. I think that's mainly the sort of main components of what's been approved on site. Part of the mitigation for the carport, the garage, well actually, all, the mitigation for the garage was to remove the pavement in the driveway. The carport also had the pavement coming out of the driveway, and it planted an area somewhere over here of 2,200 square feet and left the lawn intact on this side. What we've done is we've downsized the shed to an 8x10. We're cutting off the deck 8 feet in and getting rid of one of the bays of the carport. Removing the driveway, replacing it with either shell or crushed stone. Removing all of the lawn and all areas outside the proposed garage with native plants. And this is just kind of a general guide on how this will be planted. Along the perimeter, we're expecting medium to tall. And tall is relative on Plum Island. You don't really get massively tall plants. But things like tall, I would say, is like a native pitch pine or a shad bush, which might grow to 18 or 20 feet over time. Medium would be things like bayberry. High bush blueberries, stuff like that. Maybe down to sort of the 4 foot level, maybe a shrub at mature height. This area here would be much lower. That would be, is that the mix? No, this is the low area. The green area is the low area. That's more like beech heather, beech grass. Maybe some low bush blueberry. And it might be okay to incorporate a couple taller things in there, but the idea was to not have the home and the garage feel like they're sort of surrounded in the woods, but to give it a little bit of a sense of openness. On the corner here, we also call for the low plants because we don't want to do anything to affect the view as you come out of 61st Street. And if any of you guys have ever pulled out of 61st Street, it's very narrow. There's a telephone pole right here, and it's kind of not the kind of place where you want to think about an obstructed view in either direction. This area here is a mix. It can basically be anything from the planting list. So if you want to put some tall stuff, some short stuff, whatever. I suggested to him that even up along here, it would be good to still have the low stuff. If he wants to put some higher stuff towards the house, that would be fine. But you don't want to mess with the view. So the net impact of this is we're reducing the approved impact. We're reducing an 18x20 shed down. We're reducing the deck and the carport here, putting in the three-car garage, and instead of having the concrete ramp that would have to run all the way to the street, we're basically doing a mound of sand clean sand that meets the requirements for use on Plum Island, with crushed clamshell on top. This gives us the ability to change grade a couple times in order to reach the garage elevation without nosing the car or bottoming out. This can be done with concrete, but you need three different slabs. And it also would not look anywhere near as nice to have this giant, massive, concrete ramp here. The other benefit to doing this is if you envision this area is in a floodplain, and it will continue to be in a floodplain after July 3rd, is if you do get a flood, the flood elevation is still going to be well under, right now it's 2 feet to the first floor over the current floodplain. It will still be a foot and a half over the proposed floodplain. That means this entire section of concrete, which is all pile supported, is above the floodplain even in the future map. So there'll be no reflection of wave energy off of a concrete ramp going into the floodplain. In the event you had enough moving water, this is essentially a sacrificial ramp that can then be used to absorb flood energy and disperse, and then clamshell and sand will easily mix in with native material, unlike a sort of a gravel ramp where you'd end up having gravel mixed in with sand. So from that point of view, this is a much more sort of Plum Island friendly approach to getting up to the garage than the concrete ramp. For maintenance, over time, the clamshell will set up with acid rain going into it, a high pH clamshell. Over time, it'll sort of achieve a somewhat hardened surface. It still remains pervious, but it will stick together. In the first few years, I envision he'll have to add a little bit of clamshell at this interface just to keep it so it's a nice, nice transition. The area under here, Julia had asked, and I responded by email about this, keeping that stable. I think we can just address that by using the filter fabric in the area that we can't vegetate. The side slopes of this will all be vegetated densely, so that on top you've got the clamshell holding that sort of ramp together, and on the sides you've got vegetation doing it. Around the building, we've left a 4-foot strip that would either be crushed stone or clamshell. I'm encouraging clamshell because I just think it'll have a nicer look to it. But the idea is that we're going to plant the entire lot with native plants to give some space to get around. To get around to the shed, to get back around to the driveway. Overall, I think, what we've got, and I do notice I do have a typo, not quite as bad as the typo in the last NOI, but on page 2, I refer to an additional 3,000 square foot area of plantings. That was actually from an early draft, just eyeballing it. It's actually 2,150 square feet of mitigation over and above the 2,200 that was required in the earlier permits. And keep in mind that the 2,200 that was required in your earlier permits was mitigating for an 18x20 shed and for a 3-car carport. So what we're proposing is to still maintain that level of mitigation, and then on top of that, 2,150 additional square feet. When you look at the garage itself, that's going to be under 1,000 square feet. I guess if you include the ramp, it probably just gets a little bit over 1,000 square feet. So we're giving you more than 2-to-1 mitigation for the garage itself, in addition to mitigation that now is more mitigating, I guess, for the other impacts. The approach, as I mentioned earlier, is construction snow fence would be the first thing to be installed on the property. All of the lawn will be removed. The driveway pavement will be removed. This area would all be planted. Then we would contact the conservation agent or conservation administrator and have her confirm that before any work began on the garage or on the grape barn. So essentially, before any of the additional sort of building goes on the property, you'll have the mitigation in place. So I think what we've come up with is a way to carry out the various projects that Mr. Rousseau wants to do in a way that not only complies with performance standards, but also does an excellent job of mitigating for any impacts. I guess I should point out one quick plan change that was done after we filed. When we were doing the plan, it was kind of racing to meet the filing deadline, and we saw this addition going over the stairs, Steve Sawyer, who did the plans, and myself, and assumed that he was no longer going to have an egress here, so we put a set of stairs over here so he would still have egress. Turns out that the addition plan actually leaves the stairs intact and just covers them over by roof so it doesn't have to shovel them off in the winter. So we removed that set of stairs. We did, at Mr. Russo's request, add in a 4x6 changing area so when people come back from the beach, they can hang their towels up and change without tracking sand into the house. That's within the existing footprint of the deck, and really, it's sided down to 2 feet above grade. I guess I didn't mention that the remaining two carports we'd like to go back aside to 2 feet above grade.
So the deck structure is strong enough to hold another addition on top of it?
Well, this addition was already approved.
I understand, but...
I don't know. I don't know whether they would have to do something with these pilings in here and provide some support under that. That's just an area of detail I didn't get into. We could do that two ways. One is I could look at, having him get an architect. I mean, one of the things I should know is, given everything that's gone on, one of the suggestions was, don't get an architect to totally design the garage, to totally design things, because we want to make sure we can get through Conservation Commission with everything, because that just gets expensive. We could either provide you with a structural plan that shows how the addition would be supported prior to construction for your review and approval. Mm-hmm. I think that might be the...
If you're going to need to alter the pilings or whatever.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I would imagine they've got to do something to beef it up, because those are, 4x4?
Yeah, but it's for the deck. It's not for a house.
Yeah. It wasn't a detail that was addressed in the earlier so it wasn't something...
Is the addition going to be done soon? I
have the sense that the garage is the most important element to him. So the way I see this phasing out is obviously this mitigation gets done, then I think the garage gets built, and I envision the rest of the mitigation is going to be done. And at some point before the expiration of the permit, he would do the great room, or he might even ask to continue it. Because that seems to be something he wants to do at some point, but it's not really driving him. But the one thing that I said to him when I first started with this is, you got to tell me everything you want to do in the next, 5 to 10 years, and let's just put it together, put it out there. Because I know one of the things that, in part ended up driving him crazy, and what ended up definitely driving you guys crazy was this sort of piecemeal approach and, things going forward and not necessarily getting the mitigation before and all that. And then, of course, he was somewhat the victim of the 2-foot policy with DEP shifting their mind on it. But, but then again, I guess that wasn't really in the hearings either. So it just, the history was not so great, so we want to just get everything on this. And the other thing I should mention, when we finish this first round of mitigation, get rid of the driveway, over to clamshell or to crushed stone, replant all this area, then we would come in and close out the 2 outstanding permits with a certificate of compliance request that basically, we could do it 2 ways. We could say the work has not been done because now this permit will carry that. That's probably the cleanest way to do it. Or we could do it as the work's been partially completed. But either way, close those out so we just have 1 outstanding permit on the property. Because right now, you can't even tell exactly what's approved when you read the different ones because the mitigation is overlapping. So condition in 1 that says the other one's not valid.
If this permit is comprehensive and supersedes everything, maybe we could just say it supersedes the
other permits. Is if we approve this one,
right?
At the same time, then we issue 2 or 3 or whatever certificates of compliance saying it's superseded by this filing.
Yeah, I think that certainly could be done, and we could file those request right away. The only way to legally close out an order is through the certificate of compliance process. But the reason I was phasing it at this point was because by then, you've now got all the mitigation that was ever committed to in those two earlier permits. So it seemed to me to be...
I think
you, but
I
if
think
you want, but I'm happy to... Yeah, I'd be happy to come back, you know, close out the other permits before the additional work begins. I mean,
I think since we're trying to clean up everything, the sooner we get rid of those old ones.
Yeah, honestly, I like that better. I was trying to fit it in so you had more leverage, but that works too.
On this drawing, there's this bituminous concrete block. Is that existing?
Everything such as that is existing, yes. So this, you're talking, oh, here? Yes,
yeah.
That's existing and two remain.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to put a condition similar to what you did on 230, then you would have the option of converting it to crushed shell or something like that. It could be a consideration, but I think he wants to keep that.
So I like all the mitigation and all that, but what I'm concerned about is we're essentially approving a five-car garage.
Well, I don't know if it's a five-car garage. It's if you look, I actually spent some time looking online because there was one neighbor who was contacting me trying to get a sense of the height. And the garage is planned to be a one-and-a-half story. This is basically a single story with a loft upstairs for storage and possibly, you know, a place where the kids can sit. But no living space, no bathroom, something like that.
He currently has, if you want to call it a carport structure, three cars underneath, and he has a...
I see what you're saying.
He has a one-car garage under the house. So he's got spots now for four. He's going to end up with spots for six.
Is he not getting... He's getting rid of...
He's getting rid of
one of
those
bays.
Right, he's getting rid of one of the bays.
But he's keeping three. He's getting three more.
Right.
Yeah, there's an overhead door. I'm not sure that's actually used for cars, but...
Oh, it's a garage.
Yeah.
So...
He parks his Mustang. I don't run a car.
Yeah, so I'd say I don't know that level of what he does. I mean, what we tried to do is come up with... I mean, regardless what the structure is used for, the structure that needs a performance standard. Sand can freely move around the structure to the extent it does in this area. During a flood, floodwaters can move in and recede, and the structure will have no impact. And in fact, the vegetation in combination with the sand used for the ramp will actually serve to tap the energy away from the floodwaters. So it actually will improve the ability of the area to withstand flooding.
I guess I was looking through the surveys and so on last night. I was trying to find, I thought I had read somewhere that the project, at some point, is asked the question, is there a economically viable alternative to what you're proposing? And there is. There's already a three-car carport there.
Yeah, that's in the riverfront regs. So...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have trouble approving... six-car garage, five-car, however you want to
look at it. Tom, if you know, is the area in back where this garage is going to go, could that be a legal building lot?
If it were, it's now under common ownership. It was two lots.
Right.
Were it to have never been combined in ownership, somebody could have come in to build a house.
So it can't be separated at this point?
I don't know. That's getting into legal issues and legal questions that I honestly don't know.
I mean,
one way to rationalize
what's going on here
right.
is to say, look, if it could be a separate legal building lot, you know, there's less going on here than would be if somebody were sold off
right.
as a house lot and somebody built
I believe he purchased the two lots with the idea that he was one day going to put a garage on that other lot. You know, that's one of the things he's expressed to me.
I would think it's probably pretty close to the, quote, common size lot at Plum Island or the 70 by 70. I'm sure that area is probably about that size.
If you look at the original subdivision plan, there is a lot line somewhere in here.
That'd be close.
And I think for the new house where there was
I mean, to me, whether it's a garage or whatever it is, it's an issue of
use should be less important than whether or not the structure itself can function with the dune system and do it in a way that doesn't cause any harm. So with that, I mean, I understand it's more under roof storage of cars than I would ever need. But I don't live there. I don't sort of live his life, and that's, you know, that's a decision for him to make with that piece of land. I might use the land differently if it was my own, but you know, the issue comes down to, we've got it, it's elevated, it meets your performance standards of both the ordinance and the Wetland Protection Act. It improves the situation from a flood perspective and from a wildlife perspective. I mean, this level of native shrubs does not exist in the south of the island. Soon, at 230, there'll be a smaller area. But if you take a look at the list of plants that I proposed, it's a list that's unlike other mitigation plants that you guys see. I mean, typically you get the cookie cutter, you know, plant, beach grass, 1 foot on center, 2 feet on center, whatever. You might get some bayberry. You might get, you know, a couple other native things, with, you know, maybe a pitch pine. But you don't get this kind of blended mix that really will provide both food and shelter for songbirds.
We have anything else?
What kind of vegetation is going to be planted along the driveway to stabilize?
Well, you've got two different things. This is the low area, and this is the choice of everything. What I'm going to be suggesting to them are the things with the stronger root systems that tend to be used for slope, you know, slope stabilizing. Even something like a low bush blueberry would do well. Hold that together. I think inkberry is on my list. Inkberry. No. I envision beach grass being fairly minimally used on the site. What I picture beach grass probably being appropriate is in an area. If it were my place, I would do sort of a mix of beach heather and beach grass instead of lawn. Because if you ever see what reservation terrace looks like, just about this time of year when the heather's flowering and the beech grass is in between it. It's a look unlike anything other, and to me, I like that much better than I like lawn.
Especially since you don't have to mow it.
Yeah. No, seriously. I mean, when you think about it, lower maintenance, you don't have to water it. I mean, the only drawback to planting all this native vegetation is if you ever want to do something in the future, it's a lot harder than living with. So, you know, it's...
With all this installed here, a two-car carport,
right?
One-car garage in the house, and now a three-car garage.
Yes.
Do we really need a shed?
Well, Warren seems to think that there's some things he'd like to have in a shed that would be, you know, I don't know exactly what he's got in mind for the shed, but that the stuff he'd like to have in a shed is sort of more convenient than going up the ramp to get something out of the garage.
But there's no way to get to that shed conveniently. The carport is enclosed. You're going to have to go out the front door and walk all the way around.
Well, either the front door around here or out here and then kind of cutting around there. That's why we've kind of left this sort of loop of walkway there. So, you know, it might be something where, you know, maybe beach chairs are in it, and the kids go out, they change, they run over the shed, they grab the beach chairs and run to the beach.
Grandkids, that shit's old.
What's that?
Yeah, I don't think it's our job to decide what.
Yeah, no, he's got one kid just graduated. Yeah.
They were in elementary school
when
this whole thing started.
Be there as it may.
Yeah, is that shed all new?
I think I put 1 foot similar to the 230. And I think the idea of anchoring it is equal on this. And in fact, in this case, I imagine it could even be anchored to the structure over here somehow, just so that if there is a flood, it doesn't become somebody else's.
Is that a fence that's in front of them?
There's right here,
there's sort of this little fence. I'm not sure if it's... I don't think it's doing any kind of retaining, but it's sort of a fence where he currently keeps some equipment kind of leaned up. You know, it sort of acts like a shed without a roof. I think a snowblower might be parked over there. I'm not sure.
Keep that
in mind. Yeah, well.
So we have, do you have anything else, Paul? Good. All right, anything from the public?
My name is Robin Murray. I live at 173 Mount Boulevard. I've been a property owner there for 40 years. I've lived there 20 years, year round. I have a double lot, such as Mr. Russo. Many years ago, the city said, you have a double lot, you could divide. I didn't have a chance to divide them. And they said it's not a legal lot, so I had to make the two single lots into one. So that lot that he has now is one legal lot, not two lots. So I'd just like to clarify that. The only thing, the problem I have with this whole project is that I've been there on the island for so long, like some of you. The beach grass has been disappearing for the last 20 years at a real heavy rate. I don't understand why Mr. Russo needs a three-car garage, as we've said before, if he's got 3 bays underneath the thing and a car garage under the house. Why are we giving up this beautiful lot that should have had beach grass put in there 5 years ago, as we all know, for all the litigation that went on? When he first started the project, when he put the plywood up, he knew he shouldn't have done it. He put it up, and he had a big problem taking it down. Finally, the board made him take it down. God bless Mr. O'Brien for putting up with him. And then he goes and doesn't put in the beach grass. Now, that's why he wants to put some of the vegetation in before he even starts this project. I mean, I don't understand why we're giving up so many square feet for a three-car garage. It says here on page 3 on the bottom, it says they slightly increased the size of the garage. It's 20% bigger than he approved the last time. 20%, that's a lot. That's not a slight increase. That's a lot. That's the vegetation you're giving up. I'm sure that you can work along with Mr. Russo is to leave the cardboard the way it is. Let him enclose a little bit that you're allowing him to do underneath it. Forget the garage. He's got 3 cars underneath and the 1-car garage under the house. Why do we have to take that beautiful lot? I have a double lot. It's all beach grass. My front lawn is beach grass. I pull the weeds so the weeds don't pull up in front of the beach grass. I fertilize it so it's green and beautiful. Take a ride down by my house. You probably know it. It's a shame that you allow this guy to put... I'm concerned with the beach grass, the lot that you're going to give up. And once you put cover up that beach grass, you'll lose it forever. So another point I'd just like to make, you just give me a petition. The reason he doesn't want to go underneath his carport, it says in the letter here. He doesn't like the protection that the carport gives him. But if you let him close it. But there's only one vehicle in that house net right now. Mr. Russo lives by himself. There's one vehicle. And you're going to get permission to put in 6 vehicles? I don't think that's right. I don't think that's... right for the island, the neighborhood. So that's my point. So I hope that you give this a real hard look and let's protect some of this open land we have in Plum Island. We don't have a lot of it left. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anything else from the commission?
if I can just address a little bit of what was said. I think the original garage was 22 by 32, and this is 24 by 36. So in terms of dimensions, I can understand area. Maybe it does work out to be 20%. A slight increase to me was 2 feet this way, 4 feet that way. However, the only commitment to put dune grass in the lot was 2,200 square feet. We're bringing that up to over 4,000 square feet in terms of native vegetation. And dune grass may be disappearing from the north end of the island from development, but it's also native shrubs have completely disappeared from the north end of the island. There's very, 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 very little stands of shrubs on the north end of the island. So I would put out that's equally as important. But dune grass is in the mix of sort of the palette of plants that can go there. So if the commission wants to ensure that a minimum part of that is dune grass, then Mr. Russo would be fine with the entire thing with dune grass. You know, what I came forward with was what I thought was a more appropriate mitigation program, because you don't have this type of shrubbery, you don't have this type of food source and shelter source on the island. Really, about the best shelter that birds have at this end of the island are people's decks. I mean, that's kind of like, I don't know how many times you've been on the island and you see birds nesting in places that you know they get cleaned out of right after they lay eggs. So, you know, we'd be happy to do that. I mean, with regards to, you know, it's his property, and whether, you know, he needs all three bays is, you know, something that I really, you know, personally don't want to get into. What I want to get into is whether or not it meets the performance standards as proposed.
May I say one more thing?
Sure.
Thank you. If it's a three-car garage and it's as big as it is, that garage is going to be a bigger footprint than my house. My garage that I have will fit twice into that garage. And how do we know that that's always going to stay a garage? We don't.
I think under zoning, you can't have two homes on a lot. So, you know, right now, Mr. Russo could come in and propose to tear this down and build a house on the lot, and under FAR and, you know, and lot coverage, you can build a pretty large structure there because it's a double lot. But, you know, instead he's keeping a modest house, which is actually smaller than the garage structure he's looking to build, and you know, to him the garage is more important than the living space. And by the way, from a zoning perspective, this brings him to 19.9% lot coverage, so he can't expand it but 0.1, you know, percent of the lot, which is basically he can't really do anything. You know, you take into account the shed, you know, what's here, the existing, and what's proposed, that would get him right up to 19.9.
Why is it that this garage needs to be that much bigger than the previously approved garage?
The previous approved garage, from what Mr. Russo said, was a smaller than if you just sort of went to build a standard garage for a three-car garage. And I searched the internet, and there's a lot of garage plans out there for three-car garages that are actually a lot bigger, like 26 feet deep and 38 feet. And I could not find a garage plan that was actually smaller than that for a three-car garage. I was actually looking because there was a neighbor who was concerned about height, so I was trying to figure out how tall this thing might be. Because we don't have a framing plan or anything above the pilings. So, you know, what I saw for plans ranged from 21 to 23 feet. Just if that gives a sense of sort of how tall this thing would be above the slab here. So, you know, that's what I'm looking for, but in the dimensions you look, this is not an overly large structure for a three-car garage.
Wasn't there a drawing submitted along with the letter showing the size of the garage and the height of the garage and the style of the garage? Was that approved?
There, in an earlier permit?
No. I believe it was in the letter that you submitted. I believe. I could be correct.
I don't think there was. I may have submitted the old approved plans, but I don't believe it was. Because we don't have one. So the only thing I possibly could have submitted, and I don't think I did, was the old approved plan.
Okay. What's the commission want to do?
Is that a motion? I'll second it.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? No? Was that an aye or a no?
Aye.
Aye.
Is that closing this hearing or is it closing? I don't know if you have a good show.
Oh,
there are voices.
There's somebody on the
well, and
I think a motion
is that a motion to issue an order of conditions or
no,
to
no,
not
no.
issue an order of conditions? I mean, does the applicant want to know whether or not the commission is going to approve or deny the project?
Yeah.
Because otherwise they might request a continuance. So I don't know if we want to close it before they have an opportunity to possibly request a continuance. To provide, you know what I mean, revisions or more information or whatever. Otherwise we don't have an option.
So,
let's more information.
Do we have the?
I think it's too much for the lot. I understand that it meets the performance standards, and I'm not quite sure how we would deny it. But I just can't rationalize approving a visible five-car garage and then another one under the house and then someone else comes in. His and a six-car garage, you approved his.
Do you have a basis in sort of in the performance standards or in the regs to base that on?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. It's kind of a gut feeling that we have that doesn't need to,
I mean, I'm perfectly happy with talking about what's there and what we can do with it to make it more of what he wants. I believe it as a three-car carport. We could work something out there.
Unless you want to say that the mitigation, it's on the basis that previously required mitigation has never been. I don't know if that's a valid.
But that really goes to the compliance with the
yeah,
prior
with
permits.
The prior
it doesn't
permits.
Really,
yeah.
It doesn't really address this
right.
particular application.
Yeah. And if you did that, you could go and play beach grass there and then
right.
refile this.
Right.
Yeah, I know. So.
What do you consider just a two-car garage? I guess.
I mean, I can ask him if that's you know what the commission wants, but I mean, I guess I do need, especially because I'm supposed to be over at Newbury at some point tonight before they leave. But they have like 10 items on the agenda, so I'm still safe. Yeah, I mean, this is what he feels he needs, and he feels what would meet his needs, and you know, in part. This is, gives him a place to put his vehicles and to put his belongings that are is above the flood elevation, which is something that the existing doesn't give him. The existing is at or below grade. So, you know, during a flood, he's got no place to put the vehicles except to get them off the island or wherever it's worth.
You know, what about everybody else?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps he's already is. I mean, the owner's storage is becoming a, you know, antique car collector or something and wants to store them on his own property, and if there's no reason to deny him, then how can you deny him?
Yeah, I know.
He may not
agree with what he wants to do, right? Rules are rules.
It really comes down to the issue of use versus the issue of impact to the protective resources. And from the protective resources thing, we try to address the past compliance issues with the upfront mitigation that gets you more than what was committed before. You know, we're trying to recognize that that's an issue. You're not supposed to use prior permits to judge a current application, but you know, clearly that's on everyone's mind as you look at this. So we're trying to be upfront with that. And that's just down to, you know, we've got something that I think the ramp and everything is sensitive so that we're not creating any kind of a flood issue. The design, I think, is probably better than a lot of home designs to get approved out there. But if, you know, if you want me to address any issues to the client, I can certainly do that. But I do think you guys voted on the motion to close the hearing, so you probably, if you want to do that, somebody needs to move to rescind that motion, and then we can continue the discussion.
Would anybody like to move to rescind that?
If you'd like me to.
Depends on whether we want to officially discuss it. Are we all set? Do I hear a second?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting good, but I just don't.
I just think it's a waste.
You know, I think waste. We're all in agreement that there just isn't. Yeah.
Well, I'm not. I'm suggesting that we simply it in order to ask the client if they would consider a two-car garage instead of three. Less than that.
No. I'm not hearing a second.
Better be birds up there.
Okay. And we do the issue of the order of conditions. Motion. I'm forgetting.
Well, unless we're changing our policy, we need to see if there's another hearing.
Okay.
In which case, we have to rescind that previous motion.
Right. I was getting confused with the closing of the issue of the order. That's the confusion I was having.
I think we've got another hearing out there.
Okay. Then we're going to need to rescind that, aren't we?
I think you close it, but then you have your discussion about what you issue.
Conditions.
Right.
Later, but it sounds like that's still up in the air, so.
What special conditions there would be.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry. A little tired tonight. So.
It's closed.
It is closed.
Okay.
And we're not reopening.
Okay.
So who is out there?
Is that the...
Yeah, I think that I saw Bill DC, and I think that is the folks from Industrial Park Project.
We are going to be discussing an order of conditions after we're done with this.
All right, thank you.
Second Ralph, we gotta wait for one of our members who will be here in a second. I believe he's taking a bio break.
me to text you or something if you're
me.
Yeah, I don't want you to have to come back if we're already done or whatever. What's yourself?
Okay. Next item is, let me get off here. Anthony Finari, Newburyport Public Services, Ralph Castagna, Newburyport Business Park Association, Industrial Park, notice of intent for swale maintenance.
Consistent throughout the park. business people really just want to start with the culverts and then go from there and try to fix the culverts first, and find out why they're not working, and go from there. But a lot of these swales are actually going to have to be done. And I know what the DEP said, that, you know, this is kind of a weird situation. The old regulations would have allowed this, and they changed the regulations. The new regulation says that it's after such and such a date you can, but it then makes nothing for that one. But the draft, the new draft, also would allow it. So this is a very strange thing. And then, I want to bring up, and I don't know if the board is aware of it, in 1998, this commission issued a letter, a memorandum, after Nave cleaned the swales in 96, designating each property owner to maintain their own swales. You remember what I thought? I actually have a property letter with a listing of all the streets and the various properties that they were supposed to do. But since 1998, to the letter, very, very few are maintaining their swales or maintaining the culverts or anything else in there. So I guess I'm really here, we're really here more for questions, see what types of more information you want, where we're going to go. Obviously, we're going to have to try to get the DEP out here and sit down with them and go over this. I mean, this is pretty much a serious situation. I mean, as you know, there's been a lot of flooding out there. I don't think the purpose is to get the water out of the park any quicker. It's just to get it back to what it was in 98, 96 when they did the swipes.
True. We obviously, well, you probably know that we approved work being done in front of Strem, and DEP
right.
slammed it and basically said, held them to what?
They said they could fix the culvert, and that's it. And there's another good case in point. The culvert, the swale from Strem to Berkshire, where there is a giant, I think it's 24 inch off the top of my head, that's supposed to take the water from upstream back down to its Berkshire. That swale is so overgrown that I was up there. The swale, various places, it's got water. The pipe at Berkshire hasn't got a drop of water in it. Not a drop. Then on the other side of the street, the same thing, standing water all over the place. And another inlet pipe, which goes down and crosses Parker Street, was same thing. Same thing.
So you're really saying that even fixing some of these culverts doesn't, might not do that much because the swales aren't even allowing the water to get through to
that's,
those culverts.
That's my opinion. I think there's a lot of issues with the swales.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt that.
Do you have any idea if they were, you know, if you go way back, early May, you know, remember when Port had everything with all the plans, all the swales, if they were all returned to that condition, would it work viably now?
I think it would work a lot better. Whether it would be exactly the same, I don't know. You know, all the new buildings, the newer buildings, all have detention or retention. So you go out to Rochester, the Rochester buildings, I mean, it's pretty good all out in here. There's no big problems. Stanley Tucker, which is the newest street in the park, has one little spot where there's a bunch of material in front of a culvert. Other than that, Stanley Tucker is in fine shape. So, I mean, you can see what's going on. These across the street on the other side of Stanley Tucker, I know when we did this building, I did this in conjunction with Turbide Port Engineering. There's all, even though he's not showing, there's all kinds of retention on this one. And this is probably got more parking than any other lot in the whole industrial park. male pack out there, which they don't use anymore. So, Kim.
You know, I'm hoping that what DEP needs and their concerns are related to really just needing more detailed information about the sites where the work would be taking place, about the conditions at those sites where the work would be taking place, not sort of opposing the work altogether. So, you know, we discussed when Ralph came in with this that the swales are all delineated on there. Major wetland areas and open water areas are on there. But the smaller wetland areas and the areas that are jurisdictional, a lot of areas that are jurisdictional probably, aren't really delineated on there. And so I'm not suggesting that you would have to go out and do all that delineation because that's such a massive undertaking.
We did that on the plan that we did for Nate. I actually delineated just about every single wetland. We flagged
out each
individual swale so that if the vegetation was growing to such and such a point, that was shown on those plans back then, I think all part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think we need to approach this with DEP first conceptually and get them to understand what it is we're really asking for and maybe agree to the basic principles of what we want to get done out there. And then find out from them what they would need, and you know what the commission would need, you know, location by location, to approve, be able to approve the work, either at a large scale or a small scale or somewhere in between. But
you know, the other thing that actually needs to be jumped on, I think, very very quickly, and I think it's also plays some part in the restrictions and drainage. Is the phragmites growing in the swales. Because they are a restriction in themselves. They're building up the bottom of the swale by themselves. Anything that gets tossed into a swale, plastic bags, paper bags, go right up against them and act as a temporary dam.
Yeah.
All the phragmites should come out of the pot. But at least it's cut down to a very low level and maintained it out.
But I wonder if it would be of any good if, you know, we get DEP out here and if all of the, if you can map back all of the locations where work is intended to the original filings and say, we just want to restore it. You know, because it, you know, Nate was told by us,
right,
you can build if you have this elevation and that elevation.
Well, that goes a long way to helping DEP approve something that would be maintenance of a drain, what would be considered a stormwater management swale,
right,
as opposed to them having to look at it as a resource area. If we can prove by, you know, some historical information, I know you've already been working on that and trying to do that. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Well, we did a ton of historical information in this park. I dumped a lot of port engineering stuff because I figured I'd always be able to access it. But when we did this whole subdivision out here, this was subject to core jurisdiction. So we did all the historical information as to where the actual streams were that the core had depicted, which were going to be present or were present into the park. And a lot of this that you see here is a result of that and negotiations with the Corps of Engineers. And there really only was one stream that went down through here. The rest was just flowing, that's all it was.
Yeah, I think we really need to get DEP involved in. You've got to get the negotiations going with them because they're going to stop anything that we...
One thing that, I mean, if we issue some sort of an order, they're just going to appeal it.
We didn't come in here expecting an order this evening. Even if we didn't have the DEP funds, we didn't expect to come out of an order. We just wanted to get it open, get it on the floor, see what kind of questions, the input the board had, go from there.
You said at the outset, I think, Bill, that we want to start with the culverts, right?
Right.
That's fine, but you know, I think if we're going to go through this drill with DEP, we really ought to have, I think, a comprehensive idea of all the things that need doing out there. Because otherwise, we're going to be doing it again and again and again and again.
And we need a real determination for them about the swale issue and what they're going to allow and what they're not moving forward.
Having said that, though, I like the idea of the restoration concept or the restoration pitch, that we're going back to something that existed at a point in time. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to do. We don't want to
I do have a list of what I consider to be the major restrictions at this particular time. And one, I can give, want me to give them a list?
List of the areas?
Yeah,
sure.
Go ahead.
I mean, I've put a lot of time out there myself.
I've been out there. These are some of the major restrictions that I've had. Oh, I only ran 4 copies. You guys want to see it.
In February, when the cattails have all died and were mostly decomposed, we could see, because now that everything is grown in, it's cattail. In some instances, see what's going on. And it's just an example in April. By the way, I'm Ralph Castagna, one of the applicants. In April, we had a storm, and I don't know the exact date, it escapes me, but we had about 3 inches of rain in 16 hours. And I was grubbing out in the park, all around the park, during that rainstorm. I don't consider that a major, major event, but it's certainly not a light rain. New Pasture Road concerned me a little bit, because right in front of that Newburyport Business Park, which is a condo complex that I think was originally built by Kerry and Jones and then sold to Dan O'Leary, and that was sold to the county front of the town. There's a condo complex there. Right in front there's a large detention basin, and I'm going to just guesstimate, if you will, that that water must have only been etched on about 18 inches from the slab on grade. So I just think this, I don't have my arms fully around the flow of water. I know the directions and what the intent is, but there must be some blockage somewhere. So whether that blockage is phragmites, cattails, culverts, all of the above, I see a problem up there. I think that 6 inches of rain in 24 hours could possibly flood that business center. Possibly.
That's that spot that he's talking about is one of the spots that I didn't find a culvert. I have no idea where that water is supposed to
go.
Where's
Pasture Road?
Right here. And this is what he's talking about, this spot right here. You've probably seen it, the cattails out there.
Yeah.
It would seem, I mean, all the drainage here, goes this way. And it's supposed to cross. There's two giant culverts under Graff Road.
Yeah.
It would seem that this is supposed to somehow feed into this. But I couldn't find a culvert. And I mean, that was way back when we started this. And the other area really to bring to your attention, and I caught it before, is Trouble Wetland.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute disaster area. The swales, if there are swales, can't find them. This little blue area that shows on the corner here, not this pass right down. When I was out there Friday, the water was just about at the road level. There was a previous rainstorm. I was out there a couple of weeks ago. The water was out into this road here, going down to the Bixby site. I mean, and this is just 100% fragmented. It's a major stand where there's supposed to be culvert. And coming out of here, and coming out of here, there are giant pipes that dump down into, over here, giant pipes that come across here and go there. I mean, they're, I don't measure, but 3.5 feet, 4 feet, and they got how much water?
Well, one thing that comes to
you, want to see it.
One thing that comes to my mind, Bill, based on what you've just said, is that it may just very well be that if you were designing the stormwater engineering for this whole site now, you wouldn't design it the way it was.
Well, as I recall,
I hesitate to use the word design because maybe some of it just grew.
As I recall, I was also involved in the permitting of this parcel, which was plastic. And there is retention in here. And as I recall, there was a replicated wetland supposed to be in here too, which is what I think the cattails are. But we're showing a culvert here, which it should be a culvert here, over here. That's a lot.
What one of the problems that I see, and I don't know that there's anything we're going to be doing about it, but I at least want to point it out, because this cattail seemed to thrive in anywhere from an inch or two of water up to, an inch of water up to about 4 inches of water. That's where they thrive. That's where they become dense. That's where they grow. That's where they become, that's where I see a lot of restriction. So I don't know that it's ever going to happen. We're going to go into the park and take some of these areas and dig them out. Similar to what seemed to be done in a newer part of the park, as Phil pointed out earlier, as you basically in front of what is now a Varian building, which has now become the Varian building and the Rochester buildings and the Zim Pell properties seem to have ponds that consistently hold water, and in fact, in just about every case, there aren't very many cattails. The only one that really doesn't hold water except when there's a major storm is this large basin back here behind Zampel. And that's why I would say that this area right here doesn't seem to be a problem. Water, this basin can handle quite a bit of water, but I'm going to bring it with Bill, having walked around, that the area around Preble Road is problematic. The areas that are shown in red, so we've delineated the areas. The question is, I don't know that we're going to be able to tackle all these areas because of the financial resources. Right now, the intent is to deal initially with just primarily culverts in a joint effort between the Newburyport Department of Public Service and the Park Association. And I think the money will run out very quickly. I think we can get culverts done. The thought was, where there are swales, we will deal with the individual property owners. So the message we're sending is, if there's a swale that empties into a drainage easement, if they're willing to pay us to just scrape it down a little so that water can flow a little bit easier, they'll pay us, we can get that done for them. One of the big questions I have is, who really owns the drainage easement? So I put that out to everybody. I mean, if it's a drainage easement that was put in place many years ago, need with selling property. So who's responsible for the drainage easement? And as just an example, I want to point out, this is a very, very long drainage easement. I bet you this is over a third of a mile. This starts at Henry Graff Road, and it goes all the way over Malcolm Point by the L3 building and runs into the Little Road. It happens to be the area where that big rainstorm went back, for that rainstorm, that 3 inches in 16 hours. That's where I discovered the beaver dam. The beaver dam was about 2 feet high, and the impact of that is, even well after the storm, a week later, it was still holding about 2 feet of water. So what was happening, the point out, is some of these swales off of Opportunity Way, there's a building out here, as an example, Lake Manufacturing, there's a swale here, and then there's a drainage easement here. These were all backing up because of the beaver dam. It's now been eliminated. So Bob Lake called me up and said, geez, he's really happy. Even after a rainstorm, he didn't feel like the water was overflowing his drainage swale and wasn't any longer creating wet areas and sort of low-lying areas of his property with grasses. So one of my questions is, one day, is there going to be a day that's going to come that you're really going to have to go in there and dredge up some of those drainage easements? Not really clear on who's responsible for that.
According to this document, and I'm going to give it to you so you have it in your file, since you probably never played it directly, a good part of the easements belong to the city, according to that document. Not all of them, but a good part of them. But still, the commission at that time designated the property owner to maintain it. Obviously, this is too much.
Well, how do you bring 15 property owners together? Well, maybe that's an exaggeration, but certainly one. And it appears this one drainage easement, that's a third of a mile. It seems to be tied more to the southerly base properties, so the properties that are off of Mulligan Way as opposed to off of Opportunity. So in other words, if you look at the property line here, the drainage easement is shared by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 properties.
The reason for that would be Opportunity Way wasn't constructed, and neither was New Pasture Road.
Right.
The New Pasture Road was all one parcel. So these places were coming into existence, and I would guess that's why the easement went to those people.
Have you thought about creating something like a drainage association?
Well, where
people could financially participate in it. You target the most important projects first with the funding you had, but you peck away at it until you made some progress.
That's what we did. It's been in the papers. What we formed is a park association in which Ray Nippes, the vice president of Bixby International, is here, and him and I together have been working on trying to improve, and it's really for Ray and I, it's community service. This project has taken on a lot more time than I ever anticipated, but I'm still glad I got involved. But yes, we've done that. We formed an association. We've got about $11,000 in the account. How far is that from that? So I'm going to answer this. Dealing with culverts, just cleaning out culverts in front of a culvert, removing the blockage, the restriction. Dealing with swales on properties is not going to be a problem. I think we can get that done. The question is if we have to deal with a large drainage easement. In some situations, they're accessible. Many. In some, they're not so accessible. But, you know, with these drainage easements on these plans, I think it's going to be tough to ask the property owners to pitch in to clean a drainage easement. And there aren't many drainage easements that need cleaning.
Maybe that's something your association could do collectively.
Yeah, Ray?
Yeah, Ray Hickey's. I live in town. The problem that we had in the park, when you guys should go ahead and have individual property owners maintain the swale, we have some that are landlords outside the city, you know, there's no driving point for that. Nade was a good driving point. They were a focal point. They could whip the park together, and so we've had basically a vacuum out there for a period of time, which is one of the reasons that Ralph and I said, you know, somehow, some way, we've got to get this thing re-energized again. So we started this in March, and
January
we kicked it off, but basically it's been the last 3 or 4 months that we've actually put this association together. I totally agree with you. We need to get additional participation from the members if we go past culverts, because it is going to be a financial situation. And but I don't think that that'll be a problem. I think that the issue was that to try and get all of these guys together initially and dealing with individuals is very difficult.
Let me ask about the drainage easements. I mean, if they're real easements, that's a legal concept. I mean, is it on anybody's record title? Has anybody done any research?
Some of the newer ones that this commission put on their orders of conditions to perpetually maintain. But you know what a problem that would be, stop pulling all the deeds in the industrial park. I mean, all the order of conditions in the industrial park, figure out which companies have it and which companies don't. But there are companies out there, and I think Paul probably recalls that, putting that condition on.
I know
the
I was started doing that.
Right. You know. So, you know, Rochester, for example, probably has it on their order of conditions, perpetual cleaning. But Rochester doesn't have a problem. You know, probably stuff on Stanley Tucker probably has it on theirs. But when you get back to the old part, none of them. So
I believe I don't think it would be that hard to research that. I think if we looked up some old deeds, what we'd find is that there were order of conditions where there were certificates of probably of compliance issued, But I think that you'd find that the drainage easement at that point in time was tied to NAID. How that drain, how the maintenance of the drainage easement transfers to the city, I don't know. I'm not an attorney. But back to the drainage easements, the larger ones, they are much deeper in many cases than the swales. So if we clean some culverts out, when you get enough rain, the drainage easements do move water. There's no doubt they move water. For example, I mean, there was, like I said, there was a beaver dam that was holding 2 feet of water. We took that out. Now the flow was able to move to the Little River, drew eventually by the Little River. And also, by removing that, cleaned up some problems with a couple of property owners and opportunity way.
And it was flowing as of a couple of days ago, too, when I went over there. It was flowing right along out.
Even though it's heavily vegetated, it seems...
Oh, it's flowing right along.
It's flowing very good.
Oh, yeah. Are you in a position now where you could put together a work plan for everything you would want to do? Not just the stuff you want to start with, but everything that you think you need to do in the park?
Well,
or does,
what I prepared is probably the 10... It hits the streets and hits the major things. The major...
Yeah. You know what I'm wondering is if this may satisfy DEP in terms of the phase one, the culvert work, is if how many culverts would there be? What do you have? What is it that you want to, how many is it?
It's going to be, I don't know, at least 50, maybe 100.
Culverts to repair.
Well, to repair clean out probably.
That's more than
I'd say 20 off the top of my head without.
Yeah.
Pull my file out.
Right. Because what they were looking for clearly is a lot more detail in all areas of the application, because that's what they're used to getting, because this isn't a typical project. So, I mean, maybe do some detail, some cross-sections, some detailed construction sequencings and scopes of work and restoration, whatever, specs for culvert. For the culvert repair replacement. You know, if you're going to repair a culvert, this is what it's going to look like. If you're going to replace a culvert, this is how it's going to go. And this is how we're going to protect the adjacent resource areas if there are any on the site. These are the sites where we have adjacent resource areas, blah, blah, blah. You know, you kind of can lay that out, that phase one, with that kind of detail. And maybe that's something that they can then approve in terms of culverts. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they're going to look for.
How about approaching it conceptually, though, rather than going to a lot of engineering mm-hmm. that might just hit a brick wall with DEP? How about just laying it out in a narrative, mm-hmm. conceptually, as much the way you just phrased it,
yeah.
and then sit down with this, sit the DEP folks down. Yeah. This is what we want to do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we're on the same page, sort of looking to provide them with a model project that will be repeated, you know, a model project that they can approve the specs for and the mitigation for, and then, you know, this is how we're going to do it in all these different locations.
You talked about it starting with the culverts, and since there's so many other restrictions, do we have any feeling that if we repair these culverts, bring them up to spec, will that cause other problems because downstream of it? Or should we be attacking this from the downstream portion and working our way back?
That's what I thought. You could start from the south so that you don't have, if you fix things in the north, I mean, you increase
uh-huh,
the water
right.
flow somehow,
right.
and it ends up in the south and you get a bigger
right.
problem then.
Right. That's what we have to do. We're going to start from the south and work north.
My other concern is what's going to happen across the line and move it when we do this? What happens over there?
What we're doing? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, that may not, in a big storm, that may not be true.
Yeah.
It may
change the velocity.
It may make life worse for them. It may make life a lot worse for Bixby, too.
Ray and I have been down that road working with that. Maybe we're not conveying the message. Maybe you're thinking that we're going to do a lot more than we are. Or maybe Ray, Bill is conveying that message. And I don't know if you plan on making a big donation, Bill. there's not going to be that much. I think what we're trying to do is we're just trying to allow water to flow a little better in a storm where there might be 3 inches of rain in 16 hours or 5 inches of rain in 24 hours. There's nothing we're going to do that's going to impact.
We're not going to solve our problem.
Well, I don't want to make it worse. That's my point.
The water comes from two areas. The issue there. Everything comes, flows down through the park, and that's the last exit going out. She also got the runoff coming from the MBTA train station that was, all that pavement going down, and then that pond finally overflows. And there's, if the tide's coming in, it inhibits the water from going on out through the little river.
Right, but
so
it has that.
I have no, idea that this is going to solve the problem at Bixby, but what I do know, in driving through the park, there are places where flow is inhibited, and so it's causing issues back from me, and, it's not changing mine at all. A certain amount that certainly comes from Parker and from behind Rouse building and some of these other ones over there, that we can only take a certain amount of water. And a 100-year storm or 50-year storm, we're going to have more, no doubt in my mind. I don't think we're going to make it any worse. The blockage is really the culprit that goes underneath Route 1, and the Corps of Engineers have refused to do anything at all about that.
Well, the train station is also, the old train line also is a major problem.
Exactly.
That's,
it's
bouncing back on there.
Route 1 floods.
Yeah.
I think it would have helped the situation in the park totally if they would have agreed to double the size of the culvert underneath Route 1, because that's a blockage area. But they weren't going to do that. So that's off the table. My interest, I work at Bixby, but my interest is really in the greater overall of the park. I mean, there's places that in the last 15 years when I first got involved out there, never had any water. They got water now. So what's happening? And when you go and see, just like Bill said, you walk in and you see a culvert that's absolutely dry, and behind it, not 50 feet away, there's 4 or 5 inches of water just standing there. And if you look at the way the thing was originally designed, it was designed very well, assuming everything continued to flow. And but through the years, the silt has built up, and it's just not performing the way it was originally designed for.
As an example, if we get what we hope to accomplish, starting from the south, race building, if we get 3 inches of rain in 16 hours, I'm not saying that Preble Road is underwater, but I'm saying that the level of the water in these wetland resource areas within, like 2 or 3 inches of the road, literally almost flush with the road, it's like it reaches that brink.
There's water that sits on the corner of Preble Road.
Right here.
There's muskrat, houses in there. That never used to stay wet. And so it says to me that the culvert that goes underneath Preble and coming from the old Strianzia building, that all now is never wet in there, and that's wet over a portion of the time. So something is not working in that particular area.
New Pasture Road is an example. I'd like to figure out what's happening with that, because I thought water within a foot or a foot and a half was still pretty close. But just to give you some idea of elevation, because I've studied some drawings and properties, Ray's building is, because I saw the certified flood insurance report. Ray's building is at 13 elevation, 13, so it's 13 feet above sea level. My guess is Bradford and Bigelow next door, I wouldn't give it much more than 15.
Yeah, and they didn't flood.
Okay, and they didn't flood. So now, you go up here to Parker Street, just to give you some idea of elevations, which I think is useful information. My Mulligan Way building, Mulligan Way, we'll go to Parker. Mulligan Way over here at the Green Tech Center, I think that's about maybe 22 or around approximately 22. My building on the corner of Boston Way. Right here. It doesn't show a building there. This is a 10-year-old building, but I have a building right here in the corner of Boston Way. That elevation of that building is 20. The elevation of Seaport Industrial Park is 22.5. That's the elevation of the slab and grades. So when, you know,
it's pretty simple.
So I think I think we're just trying to maybe control the flow of water in relatively minor storms. I think what we're going to do is going to have no impact whatsoever on a major storm. It's like taking a little eye droplet and putting a drop of water in a pond. It has no impact. Okay, it might have an impact on a cup, but it's not. So in a major storm, what we're planning on doing, I don't think it's going to really do much at all.
So do you think we should invite DEP to come up for a commission meeting? Would you like to have them in a commission meeting, or do you think we need to have like a working meeting with Tony and the mayor and us? And, I mean, what would you prefer?
I think a working meeting, and so that should be flexible enough so that we can jog out to the park and show them some of the problem areas.
With DEP.
Absolutely.
We have to have them because a couple of these, that the major drainage easement, I've told you guys this, Phil, I'm sure you know that, it's listed as a perennial stream in the USGS. The one that goes down by Bixby is also a perennial stream, and that thing was around in 1944.
Oh, yeah.
Could you show me the one by Bixby?
I think that one there.
Yeah.
That's been around for a long time.
There was no plan to even touch that.
No, I'm just saying, it's all within that. It's a perennial stream, so it's, you know, 200 feet from that, and whatever.
It doesn't show on this plan, but Bill had thought the only thing in this meeting, drainage easement, he had talked about, is possibly cutting some phragmites right down to as close as you could get to the ground. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing you've proposed.
Propose that? What would that do? Cutting the phragmites stalks? But you're not removing. If you're not removing any of that dense root structure that's trapping the sediment, they're gonna. Well, no. I mean, they're obviously gonna come back. But are you really helping the flow if you're just getting rid of the top stuff?
Ideally is to take them out. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that's,
right.
That's
ideally.
Situation.
Right, and do it and call it a restoration, but that means you have to excavate down.
How do you really accomplish that successfully without really doing some major excavation?
You have to
ditch and almost turning it back into a real stream.
You either have to excavate it out, or you have to treat it with herbicides.
You can't really treat it with herbicides. This is all going downstream.
Yeah.
It wasn't our plan to touch that
Although, with no, the rodeo, I mean, it's made for use in resource areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can use that like a phosphate in a marsh. But it's a bigger project than maybe what you want to get involved in. But I'd like to set up a meeting with DEP and DPS and commission members. You all and see if we can get that in the near future. So I'll give a call to DEP and find out who it was who made the comments and who it was who they'd want to send. Probably Rachel Freed.
That would be nice. Yes. I've talked to two people at DEP and they found Rachel.
Yeah.
Easy to talk to.
Yes.
And understanding and
me
workable.
Too.
There was another gentleman I talked there and it seemed to.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know if it was indecisive or a little wishy-washy.
Okay.
Now this one, now they put a different case manager on this one.
Who is it?
Is it Michelle? Abel?
Oh, Mike Abel.
Oh, Michael.
Okay.
Yeah, Michael Abel. I don't know who he is. I've never talked to him.
Yeah.
But I liked your idea.
Okay.
What I was hoping to do, and I'm not sure timing, I don't know. Do we call a meeting right away and ask to be put on the agenda 2 weeks from now, or do you think that's too aggressive?
I don't think
and
so.
A month from now?
I don't think so, because I think I'm hoping that the outcome of the meeting is helping sort of revise the application to the point where they'll be able to agree to some portions of it, if not all of it, or whatever. But that might take more time than getting on the July 10th agenda. I would say let's go a month. Yeah, that would be July 17th.
I would strongly suggest that you work up a phase one work plan. What you want to do, just as clear, needn't be more than a couple of pages necessarily.
It won't be. We'll get it on a page.
Just so that you know, everybody's clear, because you know this discussion has really gone all over the place.
Right. Right.
And if you want to get them on board, DEP, you can't let that happen.
Right.
You've got to be very focused on what you want to do now, mm-hmm. and why, and how that's mm-hmm. going to be mm-hmm. a good thing.
Do you want to mention that the ultimate intent is to get back to where we were back in the 80s?
I think so. I think that's just a group.
Well, I think that's the ultimate goal, but I don't see how we're going to get there.
No, but that's the basis for, that's the foundation for having them sort of understand.
Ideally, we want to get back to that state.
Yeah.
If the, you know, the mayor gets involved, what will be on the DPW, so that they got some assistance that might help a lot there.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think you'd want to, you know, set the total context, and then, as Doug said, a very focused first.
Yeah, I mean, this is your plan,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and you want them to take ownership of it to some extent.
That's exactly what we'll do.
Yeah.
I think we've done pretty good. We haven't been up here that long tonight. And what I was going to ask is this. I'd like to have a meeting with the media, if we could. Is this reasonable? Hold a field meeting
mm-hmm.
out there looking around, and then immediately following, go somewhere where we can sit down.
Yeah.
Whether it be City Hall, my office,
start with start with a field visit. Yeah. And
but the same. But the same day, well, everything is fresh in everybody's mind. Let's have a field meeting. Let's agree to walking around for about an hour. It would be at least an hour. Walk around for an hour, maybe an hour and a half,
okay.
and then go sit down somewhere for an hour and hash through this and really put it back at them. What are you going to allow us to do? What do you want us to do?
Yeah. Or what do you think is the right approach for us?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to just say to them. Tell me what I can do. When you talk to Rachel, Rachel's like, you can go clean culverts. That's not a problem. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
I thought I even heard her say, you don't even need our permission to do that.
I know. We need to get Rachel on this. We need to get Rachel on this.
Absolutely. She was great to talk to him.
Helpful.
But let me ask you this. If you're going to focus on cleaning culverts and repair culverts first, that's your first step, and you're going to start from the south and work in a northerly direction, are there other things you need to do in the south to make, and I think you asked this question earlier, are there other things you need to do in terms of obstructions in that part of the park to make these newly working culverts do their job properly? Because you may want to approach it not so much in terms of the type of work, culverts versus swales, but the area you want to work in.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's all the problems in that area.
Yeah, and then
really good idea.
And then spread
it. It goes in here.
Right,
okay,
that's
not shown. Well, basically, there's two dots right here. As you continue on Tuttle Way to, I guess, what would be the Bixby building. And there's a road. Is this a back access that goes into this road? Who's Brenton Bigelow?
That's our drive.
Small park along
that vacant piece of property is our property. And it goes. It's open.
But didn't we see the culvert that crossed the road that was completely covered? I mean, I don't even know if that's something that you can pressure blast out. I thought when they pressure blast out pipes, it might be a little sediment in there. I mean, that thing is filled to the top, and that connects this wetland resource area with that. I don't know. I mean, it's filled to the top. The pipe is practically concealed.
Is there any grant money or state or federal money available that you could explore and get to help with this?
I think that's what we would need to restore. There's no doubt in my mind that's what we would need to restore the park back to maybe what the intent was maybe in the 90s. I mean, you start talking about, you know, the answer is there may be. I heard there was some, and I guess we missed the opportunity because when we were just getting this thing going, you know, there was probably a lengthy application, and we missed that. I guess there was some deadline in March or something.
Did you try FEMA? I wonder if FEMA would be interested in flood prevention.
FEMA just gave us a grant. The FEMA MEMA project, where they did the hydrologic study, and
That was FEMA.
Yeah, that was FEMA and.
Yeah, was that the study that they did that basically said it wasn't a sufficient enough problem to to then
to give us the funding to do the culvert.
But funding is one permanent as the other.
Right.
$430,000, and it only covered the park. It did not go out. I think that was another issue they had, was it didn't cover the whole basin, because a lot of the problems are further upstream.
Ray, Bill, and I have put a lot of time into this so far. Bill has been compensated. I haven't been so far today. We're around $3,000.
Yeah.
Bill's helped us out with a little bit of an in-kind donation here. We're paying 100%, but this is what we've been able to produce for $3,000. And we had a big study done and spent $450,000 and basically told us we can't deal with culverts. Somebody made a lot of money.
Okay. I'll get in touch with y'all and let you know when we can set something up as soon as possible with DEP. And I like the idea of site visit first.
Great. Just about any day is good for me, except a Friday.
Okay. Same. Okay.
Fridays generally aren't good days for me. Any other day will work.
Okay. I'm going to aim for a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday.
Okay, we're done. Anything from the public? Okay.
Appreciate your cooperation.
I do.
So are you thinking maybe a month from now?
I'm just going
to... come back here?
Hopefully. I think we need to wait and see, actually, see what happens with this meeting.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what they say, and then we can go from there. We can always continue it again, or we can put you right on the agenda, but we have time to do that. If we continue now to July 17th and make that sort of the official continuation date, then we can always extend that or go for that or whatever. We'll make it the 17th.
I'd like to shoot for that.
Yeah.
And I realize that 2 weeks from now is simply not realistic. It's just never going to happen.
Right.
Because they may have a meeting. They may say, maybe for that meeting it would be nice to have a sort of a phase one report showing exactly what we would do. So now what we want to do is reduce it down to words and say, this area on this street in front of this property.
Yes.
Yeah, and Ralphie, you want to tie that into the site visit with DEP when you actually go over there. This is an example of what we're talking about in terms of a culvert replacement or a culvert cleaning out or whatever it is that's in phase one. You take them and show them examples of, what you're talking about.
Bill's got a better, handle than I on culvert replacement of one, or actually, I know of two that are supposedly crushed, but I'd like to focus more on just cleaning around culverts. Where I've seen blockages, that the cross-sectional area of the pipe is obstructed by anywhere from, 30% to 70%, anywhere in that range. They vary. They're not all the same. Some of them have a little obstruction. Some of them have significant.
That's why I think
that's
true.
Yeah.
Somebody
sees it.
Right?
It really
reinforces what you're talking about in the words.
Exactly.
I almost have to walk through it again. I have to tell you, it's sort of an overwhelming task to sort of survey and evaluate all the drainage in the park. I've been before this commission on two properties, and I know the questions that which are very legitimate that are raised just on a single property. And you get the whole discussion on one property. Now we're talking about a park. It's an overwhelming task.
Well, yeah, but you don't want to get overwhelmed by it when you start with DEP. Right.
You break it down into little pieces.
That's why I suggest you break it down geographically, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to do what you said. We're going to come out with a phase one plan and indicate a street and a property number and a swale, and we're going to show them a few examples. And maybe after we show them maybe two or three, they'll get comfortable and assume, okay, this is typical condition.
Yeah.
These are the areas you want to do.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Great. So I'll get in touch about the meeting.
Continue to July
17th. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Last item. Would be
Northern Boulevard.
182 Northern Boulevard, order of conditions.
You closed the public hearing. Oh,
yeah.
Do you have to close the public hearings?
Motion to close. Recess. We don't need net power, just 10 minutes.
Second.
Is there a motion? Yeah, we got a little confused on that one, and I certainly got confused on it.
Yeah, I find it troubling that we would close a hearing with no indication whatsoever whether or not there's going to be a vote to issue an order of conditions or deny an order of conditions.
Yeah.
And it could be hours later. I mean, Tom is somewhere right now, doesn't know, you guys might change your mind and decide not to issue it, and he missed his opportunity to continue. That's just funny to me. I don't know if maybe there could be a vote without actually issuing the condition, voting on the conditions, there could be a vote to approve the project or deny the project, pen, you know, and then conditions to be
voted on. Well, I think it's probably going to spend 99% of the time we're going to approve something.
But that's only because someone can tell. They can sort of read between the lines and understand. But there's no real indication.
Well, in defense of the way we've been doing things, we have found that it's more expeditious, particularly if we have
right.
three or four NOIs, you know, in one evening and mm-hmm. we want to issue orders. But on the other hand, we could certainly take a sense of the commission before we close the hearing. Just to say, well, it's the sense of the commission that this is permittable.
We will be able
to issue a permit.
I think that makes sense.
And then we can close the hearing. And
I've seen the planning board do straw polls. You know, at certain times, should we move forward with this? Let's take a straw poll, or are people totally opposed to it? And that kind of works sometimes too. Okay. Good timing.
Well, I just got a text, didn't I?
No.
Oh. But if we had
done it and we're going home, I would have texted you, don't come.
Right.
Yeah.
So do we have to close the public hearings?
We had
a motion to open, so we must have a motion to close.
Okay.
Motion to close the public hearings.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now we're done. Next item is the order conditions for 182 Northern Boulevard. Warren Russo. Discussion?
Well, I'm dead set opposed to it, but I can't find a reason. It's a good plan, other than the fact that it's a six-car garage.
Do you want to make a condition that the garage shall never be used for another purpose? I mean, I don't know if that's not really even a valid condition.
Yeah,
I think that the proposal is detailed enough that I don't see any areas where we need to special condition it beyond our typical Plum Island type special conditions with regard to sand.
Is it clear from the narrative that the order of March here is the mitigation?
Yeah.
Or do we need a condition as to that?
That's actually spelled out.
Okay, I haven't been able to spend
detail.
As much time
yeah.
with this as I would have wanted
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
The sequence of events.
Okay,
is
so that's already there. We don't need that.
You could condition references and condition that they should do the things in accordance with
the proposed sequence of
right.
yeah
because that is important we all know why
the 3,000 square foot thing has to be changed in the overview.
Right. I can submit a corrected page for that. Would that be good enough?
So,
or do you want me just to cross it out and initial it in the narrative and record?
I have no problem with either way. They're both valid, so.
I would, we want to have a condition that no work be done until the applicant has filed a request for certificates for the other.
Right.
And,
right.
Just so we make sure that gets cleaned up. And
Can I just ask along those lines, do you guys care whether we file as no work having been done under those or as for partial certificates, which then gets into an as-built? I guess we'd use this plan as the as-built.
I just want to be sure there's no ambiguity between what was shown on a previous plan 2 years ago and what's here. And you've obviously looked carefully at that, Tom, but none of the rest of us have.
Yeah.
I guess we can do that, and I think what we're trying to do is deal with if there was any ambiguity that through this new plan we essentially, that there's nothing significant that I could see at all.
Yeah.
Everything looks right in line. So.
Yeah. Somehow I think we better to, indicate that, or maybe we just add it as part of our certificate that we're issuing this because no significant work was done and because this work is being superseded by this final number.
So I'll submit them with a copy of the order of conditions, a copy of the project plan, ledger size, and a...
I would say statements that substantial work under these permits has not taken place, and instead they will be super...
Instead, they are now being undertaken
under a new order of conditions.
Okay.
Well, there's some work. I mean, the whole carport will dead.
There's room in there for just text. And I don't think you can indicate that, this deck was built or whatever, but the final approval...
Deck is now changing, so I think final approval is under this new permit. So you could explain partial work has taken place under these permits, but...
Within that...
You can figure...
That's enough that I can figure out the right question.
We don't want to get, I don't know if we want to get into approving as-built plans and all that because it's just going to be changing.
I wouldn't want to
just try
approve
and
any
close them out with, we didn't do work.
Well, we show existing conditions in the underlay on that. I could probably have that cleaned off, maybe, and submit that or just submit the approved plan. I'll figure something out.
Use your best judgment. I think we can figure out a way to make that work. Okay, so far two special conditions. The first is construction shall take place according to the construction sequence on page 6 of the Notice of Intent Project Narrative. And the second is no work shall take place until such time as the applicant has applied for and received certificates of compliance for previously issued permits on the site.
And with regards to the great room and the structure possibly necessary for the great room.
Should construction of the great room require additional supports underneath the existing deck? Details shall be provided to the Conservation Commission.
No, I think what we want to know is that either it does or it doesn't. And if it does, then the details have to be supplied. But we want to be told that it doesn't, don't we?
Okay.
I think one way to do that is to require a structural plan for any modifications to the deck in order to accommodate the great room.
Good.
Be submitted prior to construction of the great room. And that way, if they've got to beef up a sonar tube or do something like that, you guys can take over it.
I mean, I would think the building department. Too.
Well, they certainly, you can't even pull a building permit unless you can show that the thing can be supported. You're not asking for anything that you already be generated.
All right, so prior to construction of the great room, a structural plan for the deck shall be submitted to the commission.
What about monitoring of growth? Is that extended?
Yeah, we have all those already in there. Whenever something comes from the lot of the island, that does that. It'll be beach grade sand, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Anything else?
Move to issue an order of conditions.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. Is that an aye opposed or an aye?
No. All right.
Or is it tentative aye?
Swallows hard.
If I can find a reason for denying it, I believe.
Thank you for coming solo.
For me, the representatives, it had to be done a certain way. You know, including the mitigation was all right.
Good job.
Yeah, if DEP doesn't like it, they can deny it.
But yeah, they have not. It's assigned to Mike Abel. They emailed me back like, right at the end of the day. Mike had left it. I copied him on my email.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
And he wasn't sure whether Mike had looked at it or not. But since it's a culmination of sort of pretty much previously approved stuff, I don't think they're going to get all the way back in the back of the car.
Yeah. Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?